This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Maybe you think you shouldn't read a book before seeing the movie adaptation, or you're convinced season 2 is the best season of The Wire. Well, that's just, like, your opinion, man.
And when it comes to culture, we've all got at least one of those. The argument we're always making, that non-negotiable stance, that immutable truth we're sticking to no matter what. Nobody's going to convince you otherwise, but arguing about it sure is fun. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Aisha Harris. And today we're talking about the pop culture hills we'll die on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car, you should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. Don't settle, find love at first drive. Start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Noom. Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. Check out The Noom Kitchen for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
When voters talk during an election season, we listen. We ask questions, we follow up, and we bring you along to hear what we learned. Get closer to the issues, the people, and your vote at the NPR Elections Hub. Visit npr.org/elections.
Joining us today is our fellow PCHH host, Glenn Weldon. Welcome back, Glenn.
Hey, Aisha.
And also with us is co-host of Slate's ICYMI podcast and former PCHH producer, Candace Lim. It's so nice to have you back, Candace.
Oh my gosh, it is really nice to see all of you.
Yes, and I'm also very much looking forward to everyone's hills that they shall die on. The premise here is pretty simple. Each person here will share a pop culture-related perspective that they feel extremely passionate about, and then the rest of us will judge them for it.
We're not talking hot takes here. We were going to call this hot takes, and we decided not to call it hot takes because we don't want it to be like confrontational, in-your-face, man. This is just something we feel strongly about.
Absolutely. Mine might arguably be a hot take, but I'm not going to present it that way. We'll see. Okay. Candace, why don't you kick us off with the hill you will die on?
Whew. I need to warn you. Mm-hmm. It is a two-parter, okay. So I'm going to state my thesis. We'll do an intermission at the semicolon. Okay. Here we go. Jacob Elordi is the new Timothy Chalamet, and he could be the next Andrew Garfield.
Okay.
Timothy Chalamet is the current Leonardo DiCaprio who will have the career of Tom Cruise. Okay. Marinate.
There's a lot to absorb there.
Explain.
Unpack.
Jacob Elordi's 2023 reminds me a lot of that 2017-2018 period when Timmy was exploding because he was in Greta Gerwig's Lady Bird and Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name. And so I remember back in 2017, Timmy is exploding beyond internet stardom. You could not open Twitter, Tumblr, Yelp without seeing photos, fan cams of this boy. But I think Timmy's time as the internet's number one boy is over because 2023, Jacob comes out, two movies back to back, Sofia Coppola's Priscilla, Emerald Fennel Saltburn. And I could not go one scroll without seeing that exact gif of Jacob Elordi in Saltburn as Felix with the little like cowboy hat on. And I just think he is occupying Timmy's space because he has this like effortless, cool, gender-bending street style. Coppola and Fennel are two people who have definitely contributed to this pipeline because they've really just like captured that allure of Elordi through the female gaze. Now, in terms of Jacob's near future, he's going to be, allegedly, in this miniseries called The Narrow Road to the Deep North, which is based on a book by Richard Flanagan. It's about this like World War II lieutenant's life as he grows up and falls in love. This screams Andrew Garfield to me. And I think Andrew and Jacob, they've both shown range very early on in their careers. Jacob did the kissing booth. Some may say that's Andrew's Spider-Man. Sure. And I just think Jacob could be like an Oscar bait actor the way Andrew has. But I want to add an addendum, which is that
okay,
I think he should become the next Margot Robbie.
So many actors, I can't keep them straight.
Wait. I know the shorthand,
I know. That's why you got to take notes. So I feel like we don't study the Margot Robbie super producer playbook enough and how she is doing so much behind the scenes to secure not only her legacy in Hollywood, but her control as an actress. And I just think Jacob has good taste and I'd like to see him use it to become this like mega producer who just like attaches his name to projects he likes. That is part one. Thoughts, questions, concerns. Let's go.
Wow.
That's part one.
Okay. I think I'm with you on the he could be Oscar bait, whatever. I see that for him.
Yes.
What I don't agree with necessarily is the idea that there can only be one.
Right.
Timothée, however he pronounces his name, you know, he can exist and coexist alongside Jacob Elordi. Mm-hmm. All right. I can see it, I guess, kind of.
I mean, we can't say you didn't show your work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's examples.
But what I really needed, though, was a whiteboard.
I was going to say.
I could track it all.
A red string.
And some string.
Yeah. I know. I left my red string corkboard in the other room, guys. I'm so sorry.
Okay. But what's part two?
All right. Timothée Chalamet is the current Leonardo DiCaprio. He'll have the career of Tom Cruise.
Okay.
When I look at an actor's Wikipedia, sometimes I'll pick out a few roles and I'll ask, was this actor chosen or choosing? I think Timmy is now in a place where he can choose his roles. And I think Timmy is trying to ball with the bros. Like, attaching himself to the biggest directors possible, that means choosing Wonka, choosing Dune. And we move to the next part, him being the current Leo. I think the comparison is obvious. You know, he is boyish. He became Hollywood A-list very quickly. And the Timmy hype reminds me a lot of Leo's Titanic era. But when Leo chose to attach himself to Martin Scorsese, best career choice of his life.
Sure.
And even though Timmy has attributed a lot of his success to Luca Guadagnino, I think he's looking for his second auteur. And so when he does, I could see Timmy going down this path of like, okay, I made my name in the indie scene, but if I'm only going to do one or two movies a year, they better make $100 million at the box office. Who does that sound like? Tom Cruise.
Okay.
I would say Tom, you know, reliable, making movies, putting in the work, nominated for 3 acting Oscars. Timmy is Academy loved, someone who is not afraid to take a check over the art of acting. And so that is my pop culture hill I'll die on, that Jacob Elordi is a new Timothée Chalamet who could become the next Andrew Garfield, but should become Margot Robbie. Timothée Chalamet is the current Leonardo DiCaprio who will have the career of Tom Cruise. End scene.
I really appreciated this elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Longest elevator of your life. Yeah.
Let's focus on the Tom Cruise because it's the only part I remember.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So comparing anybody to Tom Cruise is always fraught for me because he is so singular.
Yeah.
He was an action star. And then some of the success, a lot of the success, I would say, of the past few years is Tom Cruise going from broody action star, realizing that doesn't really work for him anymore, and pivoting to action star who acknowledges his age in kind of a wry, knowing way. It's about self-knowledge. It's about an earned self-awareness. I think Chalamet is way too young for that kind of thing.
Tom Cruise is like in his 60s now.
Yeah.
And so like his career, I think we have to sort of isolate a era of his career as opposed to the long game of his career. And I can see the point if we're talking about him and his risky business Top Gun era. Yeah, I think that's that's comparable because Timmy is still doing, like, he did Bones and All, that very weird cannibal movie. But then on top of that, he also did Dune. So I think that seems more comparable. Maybe we'll see him start to get into the rom-com era, like Tom Cruise did very briefly with Jerry Maguire. But as far as, like, action hero star, I don't know. I don't know if I see that for him right now.
Timmy and the word bulk. I don't know about that. But the thing is, like, I can see Timmy studying the game of Tom Cruise and being like, what if I fell off a building, but I was, like, really French and cool about it. So that might be something the girls want. Who knows?
I followed, like, a quarter of that, and I think you made very good points.
Thank you so much, guys.
I feel like maybe on, like, Instagram or the socials or something, you should definitely share the whiteboard diagram. Version of this.
Make a PowerPoint.
Please do, Candace.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Candace. Now, Glenn.
Yeah.
Tell me, do you have a whiteboard here?
No, this is very simple. But before we get to that, I have to say that over the long and storied history of this show, we've had occasion to visit several hills I'm prepared to die upon. A, Das Sound Machine was robbed from the film Pitch Perfect 2. The song Flashlight is terrible. Das Sound Machine rocks.
Yes.
Store-bought Halloween superhero costumes are better than any Sofro Hobby Lobby nonsense you can whip up as a parent because your kids want to look like superheroes. They do not want to look like some sad Santa Fe Gallery textile installation, so you let them look like superheroes. Candy corn is high fructose earwax. These are all hills that are littered with my son bleach bones.
Those sound like hot takes to me, but okay.
No, they're just observations. They are mere observations.
They're too real to be hot,
Here is my fresh hill I will die on. Boss battles in video games are pointless and frustrating, and they are retrograde holdovers from an antiquated gaming era. They add nothing to a game's enjoyment. In fact, they subtract substantially from them. It is time they were consigned to the dustbin of history where they belong. You all know what I mean when I talk about boss battles, yes?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I have battled many a boss.
I might need a little refresher.
A boss battle, Candace, is where any game that you're playing's innovation and idiosyncrasy and freshness and novelty stops dead so we can go back to gaming's most basic mechanics of pattern recognition. And so the game stops dead while a boss sits there, the big bad that you have to fight, and goes through their patterns that you are forced to memorize. They will throw out three fireballs. Then they will unleash five minions. Then they will send out a shockwave. Then they will become vulnerable for 3 seconds. Then they will retreat. And then it all starts again. You, as the gamer, you have nothing to do except dodge the fireballs and fight the minions and jump over the shockwave, run in, wail on them as fast as you can to take 2% of their health, then retreat and repeat. And when you've got them halfway down, then they transform into a final form where they do everything they just did, but faster and with more damage. And maybe now you have to aim for some stupid glowing spot under their thorax to do any damage. The thing is that this is what games used to be. This is all that games used to be. And people loved it back then. They loved the repetition. They loved memorizing the rhythm and this feeling of accomplishment of dying countless times because you miscounted a fireball. And I remember the feeling of bliss that crashes over you when you finally get it. I am an older man now, and games aren't on rails anymore like they used to be. They are much richer and wider and wilder. They give you more options, more possibilities, more potential to do anything, more ways to accomplish whatever you want to do, except fight the boss. Those remain lather, rinse, repeat. I find nothing about them fun or challenging. I mean, it's challenging in the way that churning butter is challenging because it is hard, it is repetitive, and we don't need to do it anymore, is the thing. So throw off the shackles of yesteryear, is what I say, and let dull, mindless repetition go the way of the dodo.
Now, Glenn, there are more games now where you can avoid the boss battles, correct? Like, I feel like there's a whole cottage industry in video gaming where you're trying to set a record for speedrunning a game, and one way to do that is to, like, dodge and weave and kind of duck past. And it seems like it's like more and more of those boss battles, you're able to avoid them if you want to.
If you want to. More of that, I say. But my worry is that this will never go away completely because gaming as an industry is just besotted with nostalgia, with like the throwback, with people yearning for the games they played as kids. I just think they're a waste of everyone's time. And we have to do better. We must do better.
Yeah. Hi, it's me, the person who only plays games that I played when I was like 12.
There we go.
but I will say, and it's like a handful. I have the newer version of Crash Bandicoot, sure. which I love. But I agree. The boss battles are terrible. The whole game is repetition because it's literally just you're running and you have to dodge things.
Yep.
But like in between, there are those boss battles that are just like, to me, that frustration you're getting at, Glenn, mm-hmm. because at least with normal level games themselves,
yeah.
you're moving forward.
A goal.
Whereas the boss battle is like, it's just one thing. Ugh, it's so terrible. So I'm with you there.
I'll be in the middle of an amazing game and I'll be like, we're doing this again? This? Yeah. Now? Yeah. Still?
Yeah, I appreciate the boss battle explainer, Glenn, because as someone who does not game, I genuinely thought you meant like, in every game, there's a part where the manager yells at you for not filling out your timesheet. Wow. And I was like, wow, every game has that? That's crazy. Wow. Yeah.
I could send you some indie games where you're not far off.
Please do. And a PS5 with that.
Well, thank you, Glenn. That's a great hill to die on. I completely concur. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that this is something that is somewhat gone by the wayside, mm-hmm. even if not completely. Mm-hmm. Steven, tell us, what is the most passionate thing you want to argue right now?
Well, I get to piggyback on something that Glenn said. Glenn gave me a beautiful distillation of the idea of throwing off the shackles of yesteryear. And it ties into my thoughts on music.
Not a surprise.
Basically, I think there needs to be a mechanism whereby songs are forcibly retired.
Okay.
Say more.
Okay.
So, big movie comes out. It leaves theaters after a few weeks, maybe if it's a big hit, a couple months. TV shows, they pop up when you search them out. And maybe people are talking about them when they come back. Otherwise, if you want to avoid it, you can generally avoid it. Songs stay on radio playlists and kind of on the wind, in stores, in your car, if you're a car radio person. And more radio stations are programmed in such a way where even if it's an oldies station, even if it's a classic rock station, that station will be constructed around a core playlist of like a dozen songs. And so if you turn on a classic rock radio station or you're flipping the dial and you just hit like, oh, here's some guitars, the odds that you will hear Bryan Adams' Summer of 69 are shockingly high. Those were the best days of my life. A song from 1985 about how life was best in the 60s is still inescapable if you listen to classic rock radio. And to me, that is absurd. This applies to holiday music. My God.
Sure.
When was the last time we got a holiday song recorded in the last 25 years?
I mean, there are a lot. It's just they're not winding up on.
We get them. Oh, my
like
gosh.
I'd to introduce you to Cher.
Ariana.
And Cheryl Lee Ralph.
Yes. Please allow me to clarify that I do not mean that nobody is recording holiday music. For the love of God. I am well aware that is the case. But in terms of what kind of seeps into the cultural firmament to the point of inescapability, it's just this endless rehashing and regurgitation of songs that were recorded 30, 50 years ago. I just think there needs to be like a blue ribbon panel of curmudgeons made up entirely of me.
Led by you.
That maybe says, in the case of Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee, this song is on hiatus for 5 years. We will revisit it in the holiday season in 2028 or whatever. But in the case of like Bryan Adams' Summer of 69, that song be permanently retired and never played on the radio ever again.
I'm just trying to think of the logistics of this because like, what is a classic rock station but a station that is going to be playing the oldies?
But there are so many oldies, Aisha.
Fair.
This is my point. Is like Bryan Adams had like 12 hits. Play a different one.
One way to toss off the shackles of yesteryear and to avoid that inescapability you mentioned is by, you know, maybe not listening to a classic rock station in 2024, as I do not. And these things you are claiming are inescapable and inevitable are very evitable. I assure you.
Yeah.
Okay, that is true. I am in the unusual position of sharing a car with three people who insist only on the radio.
There you go.
But I also go to stores. I also go to courtyards. I go to places where music is on the wind, and I hear this stuff all the time.
Oh, that's true. I've always wanted someone to do like the data on like, what is the most common song you're going to hear in any given public mm-hmm. environment, whether it's like an Applebee's mm-hmm. or a Walgreens.
I think it's Ed Sheeran, Shape of You. Okay, so I'm going to back you, mm-hmm. Stephen. I listen to the radio. I live in LA, so these numbers will only apply to Angelenos. Like the hottest music, hottest, is 102.7 Kiss FM. And then once you grow up, you go to 104.3 My FM. And then once you're like about to die, you go to 103.5 Adult Contemporary. Tell me, why am I driving to McDonald's on a Tuesday and Ed Sheeran is on 103.5?
Right.
Why? But I'm with you, Stephen, which is that like, when you think about the incongruency of like why people are mad that certain people didn't win Album of the Year at the Grammys, it is because this industry and the people listening to it are like very different people with different motives. And those radio people, they're basically just trying to find songs to play between ads. They're going to play to their interests and whoever brings in the money. And I'm going to be honest, if I'm listening to Lizzo on 103.5 or a Coles, I kind of have to take it.
I hear what you're saying, because there was a period of time when one could not enter CVS without hearing Smooth Operator by Sade.
Oh, my God.
Now,
yeah.
It's a song I happen to like. It's a pretty good song.
She has like 100 other songs.
But she has so many other songs that are so good.
But separately, that doesn't happen to me anymore, not because the CVSs aren't still CVSing, but because I am listening to podcasts on my AirPods as I walk through the aisles of the stores.
Oh. I'm the same way. Unfortunately, this hill you die
it's
on
your
will
hill.
Probably be...
Oh, I will die on it. It will not...
yeah,
this is not a problem that will be solved. This
through.
Is the hill that will kill me.
So I guess we'll move on to mine, which I did hint might be a sort of controversial take, I think, because there are so many variabilities involved. And it actually kind of jumps off of yours, Stephen, because it has to do with music. It is listening to music, watching music in public at concerts. Now, general admission. On its face, it's the egalitarian way. Presumably, everyone has paid the same or a not too dissimilar price for those tickets. Mm-hmm. And you have the freedom to just move about as you please. You're not beholden to the confines of a seat.
You're going to argue against egalitarianism. Good, good, good. Keep going. Say more.
Okay. But here's the thing. At concerts and festivals, this arrangement can be a scourge for those of us who are on the short end of the spectrum, who are height challenged, mm-hmm. as they say, mm-hmm. who must not only deal with the enthusiastically flailing elbows of tall people in their faces, or the increased risks of those tall people getting bumped and then spilling their drink on your head, mm-hmm. which has happened to me multiple times. But you also get every boring person who stands for minutes at a time with their arm up in the air, taking a bad recording of a performance they're probably never going to watch again, except to post on social media just to say they were there. Mm. Now, I have very little faith in humanity, and I'm not going to argue here that, like, tall people should all of a sudden, like, stand on the sidelines or, like, move to the back for us shorties. You can't help how tall you are. And also, as someone who is in a long-term inter-height relationship, I'm 5'1", he's 6'2". Mm. Look, I recognize that there is no perfect solution here. But I think that there is a solution. It's not perfect, but that if we were just a little bit more mindful, and especially if concert venues were a little bit more mindful, there should be sections that are designated for people 5'5 or shorter. And it can be in any part of the room, preferably closer to the front, maybe on the side, or the balconies. You get up, just like if you're going to on a roller coaster, you got to stand next to the thing. You
I was going
to
say, there's like a you must be this tall to enter.
Yes, you must be this tall. And you can choose, if you are short, to go in there or if you don't care. But I think that there should be some sort of section for people who are short so that they can reasonably enjoy seeing the artists that they want to see.
The only way this is ever going to happen, Aisha, is if you incentivize it for them. Are you willing to pay more money for this option?
You know what? I am in my 30s now, so yeah, I am.
What about like a free t-shirt, like Patreon style? Like if you're tall, you get nothing, but if you're short, you get a free t-shirt and a tote bag, New Yorker.
I just think, look, I will pay the extra, like, however much for the extra leg room. I sympathize with everyone who's tall and has to ride on these tiny little planes. I just think that there needs to be some sort of way to offer, even if just a small handful of people and we're paying extra, whatever, it's fine. But I also think that like the amount of fees that are involved here, they should be just absorbed into the fees that they're already charging everyone.
Aisha, I once wrote a column
I know.
About how tall people
should be courteous towards shorter people at concerts and maybe move to the back of the room. Maybe you just make some arrangements.
I was actually hoping you would bring this up.
I personally, I'm 5'10". My partner's 5'10". We both have somewhat wide hair. So we sometimes try to make arrangements. If, for example, we're standing directly in front of people who are shorter than us. I'm not sure I have ever gotten more negative feedback to a thing that I have written in my entire career.
I did read this article. I came across it while I was doing a little research. And you were so nice about it, Stephen. And this is, again, why I say we shouldn't leave it up to the patrons to do this. Like, I don't believe
any
me.
Patron who feels disadvantaged by this will lose their mind. If they feel like they are having a right or a privilege taken away from them, oh my gosh. I'd love to see the world try.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I back you, Aisha. I guess we're all saying our heights now. I'm 5'5 on a good day. And my whole thing, though, is that you ever seen a big dog who thinks they're small? You know, it's that situation of like the self-awareness needs to also maybe be there a little bit. But I think if we unionize, okay, if we talk to the right people, we can get this off the ground, Aisha. Yeah,
look, you can take my money if that means that I am going to be able to see Questlove's face from the audience and not have to like look at someone's phone the whole time.
I'm rooting for you, buddy. That's all I can say.
I realize the chances of this happening are maybe even more.
Writing that piece and reading the responses to that piece did not give me a ton of faith.
Candace, I think you got the best shot here. because there were many tentacles to your thesis, but B, because I think, the rest of us, it's not going to happen.
ours are pipe dreams, mm-hmm, basically. Mm-hmm.
Ours are also grievances.
Oh,
that's true. That's certainly
true. This is true. But anyone who wants to get on board with this, at me. And anyone who doesn't, I don't want to hear from you. I don't want the smoke like Stephen got.
That'll work.
Well, those are our pop culture hills. We will die on grievances, you might say, for some of us. And we want to know about the pop culture hill that you would die on. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Candace Lim, Glenn Weldon, Stephen Thompson, thanks so much for being here and, you know, letting us know those things you feel so, so strongly about.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and Ramel Wood and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thanks so much for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
It's a high-stakes election year, so it's not enough to just follow along. You need to understand what's happening so you are fully informed come November. Every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast, our political reporters break down important stories and backstories from the campaign trail so you understand why it matters to you. Listen to the NPR Politics Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.